If you say you're not allowed something, you want it more. And that's why my term, choose it, don't let it choose you. Because if you say to yourself, well, I'm going to have that. If chocolate is your thing, or cake, you know, I'm going to have a slice of cake. I'm going to have a slice of cake every day. And you choose it, you know, then you will probably have one slice of cake instead of eating the whole thing. Welcome to the Wellness Breakdown, where we examine the latest health trends and we discuss how lifestyle and nutrition can truly change the way you live.
I'm Eve Kalinick. I'm a nutritional therapist, author and consultant.
And I'm Rose Ferguson. I'm a functional medicine practitioner and also an author.
Yeah, we haven't always been in this game. Rose spent most of her youth on international catwalks as one of the most iconic 90s supermodels.
Sure about that, but Eve had a very hectic career as a fashion PR, so we've definitely been there, we've done it, and there is no room here to preach.
Yeah, this isn't one of those waggy finger should do podcasts. We're here to dig into some of the wellness trends, figure out whether some of this stuff is just nonsense, and give our personal and professional opinions on some of it.
It amazes me that the global wellness industry is now worth over $5 trillion. So before you go out spending your hard-earned cash on the latest new thing, make sure you listen to the Wellness Breakdown first. The Wellness Breakdown is sponsored by Ancient and Brave, a mission-driven wellness brand with an award-winning range of collagen, MCT oil, and nootropic blends. From supporting menopausal symptoms to supercharging your energy, Ancient and Brave's products are pure, potent, and easy to make part of your daily, morning, or wellness ritual.
Personally, I find the True Collagen really easy to take, and I normally add it into my morning coffee, which is a habit that I already have ingrained. I'm never going to miss my morning coffee, and it's definitely a way to maintain consistency.
Yes, well, I love collagen too, and I've been using Ancient and Brave for a very long time, and I do use it with clients, I use it for myself. I do actually love the cacao blends. I love the collagen one with cacao. Delicious.
Yeah, and what really sets them apart is their sustainability. They're a B Corp as well as a member of the 1% for the Planet. This means donating 1% of all sales to environmental causes that protect the planet, because collective action adds up. So buying their products means you're supporting the planet too. Visit 1percentfortheplanet.org to learn more.
Welcome to the Wellness Breakdown. I hope you've had a good week. Today we are going to talk about the phenomenon of binge purge. It used to be known as yo-yo dieting. I think it's come back dressed up as detox, retox, spa to bar. Now, you will know that I am a big fan of a reset, even not so much, but there is a way of doing it and doing it right. But I think that what we're going to talk about today is the concern that is growing, I would say, about relationships with food and the idea of restriction and then hitting the bucket button. Would you agree, Eve?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a lot of like terminology around this stuff where it's like, you know, cheat days and things like that, where it just kind of puts these sort of, yeah, it's like kind of swinging from being almost like, you know, perfect in inverted commas and, you know, being really restrictive in the week and then, you know, going all out on the weekends. And so that's kind of what we mean when we're talking around sort of binge purge.
Yeah. I've done it myself, where you're really, really good for 3 months. You feel amazing. Then you go to Glastonbury and it will go, you know, actually Glastonbury is the right time, right place, I'd say. So the cycle can be longer. It can be 3 months. It can be 6 months. You can be really good for a year. Some people are really good for most of the day. Actually, this is really common, I think. You probably hear this all the time. They're like, so I've decided that I'm going to do a keto. So I do no carbohydrate, and I do it all day, all day, all day. And around 9 o'clock at night, I get out the ice cream. So basically, they're doing high fat, high protein, high carb, because they feel really restricted. So then that feeling of purge leads to binge, because you feel restricted. And that is not a good relationship with food. And I think that is what really concerns me.
Again, like why it's important to not put moralistic values on around food is that it then doesn't become as exciting to have the ice cream, for instance, or the chocolate or whatever. Like if you just say, like, I can have that whenever I want, it feels less of a kind of a pull, because there is most of us in us a kind of an inner rebel with these things. So if you're just like, actually, I can take it or leave it and have it as part of my diet, it feels like less attractive in that way, let's call it that. But the thing is, if you restrict on any level too much, the body will want to swing back naturally. So in certain diets where they're kind of completely taking out macronutrients or at least severely limiting them, let's just say in sort of keto, it's very, very low carbohydrate. Although most people say they're doing keto, actually they're not doing keto. They're normally following a very low carbohydrate diet. But the point is that carbohydrates do give us energy. So for some people, because they're so low in their carbohydrate intake, the natural inclination then, because the body's like craving carbohydrates, is to then seek out very high carbohydrate rich foods, which would be the sugary dense foods like ice cream, for instance. So in some ways, it's just a natural reaction to that. And so that's why there is that kind of like the body's wanting to swing back that other way. Whereas if we like have a more of a consistent approach, there doesn't necessarily have to be that kind of need for some of those foods, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's so true. And also, I think it's psychologically, as you say, that rebel in you, if you say you're not allowed something, you want it more. And that's why my term, choose it, don't let it choose you. Because if you say to yourself, well, I'm going to have that, if chocolate is your thing, or cake, you know, I'm going to have a slice of cake, I'm going to have a slice of cake every day. And you choose it, you know, then you will probably have one slice of cake instead of eating the whole thing. Whereas if you deny it or you feel restricted emotionally, it'll feel like you're doing something negative. Then you beat yourself up. I mean, it's a terrible cycle. It's a horrible, horrible cycle people get into. Then they feel guilty about eating the whole cake. And then they go back into restriction. And then, as you say, you're getting hungrier because you're restricting. And then you find yourself with a tub of ice cream at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah. And I think to clarify also, we're talking about, you know, this is not wrapped up with any kind of like eating disorder, because that's a completely different thing where you're kind of purging in that way. But I do think it's really important to talk around the social pressures that come with, you know, body image and things like that. That then, because a lot of the binge behaviors can be very much emotionally driven, like you might be doing all the right things, you know, trying to fit into, I guess, a model of what society thinks that we should look like, in inverted commas. And then when it's not necessarily happening, you can feel really shit. And then that's why it might kind of drive somebody to, you know, overindulge and things like this. So it doesn't necessarily need to be food. It could be alcohol also. So, you know, there's lots of ways that that can manifest. And I think that societal pressure is a big part of this. And also, like, a lot of the kind of conversations around body image and looking a certain way and dieting and detoxing, it's all built on that binge purge, because the fact is they don't work. So, and these diets and people manufacturing these products, and now I'm going to sound like a conspiracy theorist as well, but they're hell-bent on getting you to like to fail, essentially.
Yeah,
it does become really toxic, actually. Yeah.
It is talking about societal pressure, but it's also cultural pressure. You try going out and eating healthily.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about restriction. It's just that you're trying to make better choices. So rather than the deep fried fish and chips, you're going to have grilled fish with a side of vegetable, you know, whatever, when you're out. People mock you. You know, there's a huge culture around just going, what, are you on a diet because you're eating healthily? So then, you know, I know that my kids, they would never order something healthy with their mates. They never would. And then their friends would probably take the piss out of them if they did.
I know, I agree with you. I think sometimes when you're out, there can be some like slight judgment. Mm. I think that's what you're talking about, really, around what you're eating. And it might not even be that you are eating healthier. It's more about you just want to eat that. I certainly don't have that necessarily with any of my friends when I'm going out, but I can imagine people listening to might have that.
But they probably expect it from you, don't they? I mean, I know that when I go out to eat, everyone's like, what's Rose ordering? What's she eating? You know, and so if I order a salad, everyone will roll their eyes.
Yeah, I think that it's never before been so wrapped up with emotion and societal pressures.
Yeah.
And when it comes to booze, because it doesn't necessarily need to be food related, particularly I feel like certainly in Europe, they don't tend to drink alcohol in the same way we do here. But I know that when I go out and I'm not drinking, I feel like I've got to have a barrage of excuses. And I think a lot of people feel like that. Like, I see that in my practice. If I'm saying to somebody, you need to come off the booze for a little bit, because sometimes it really is going to be necessary for whatever they're wanting to address.
Yeah.
They're like, but what am I going to say to my friends? And I'm like, who gives a fuck about your friends? Like, there's such a huge amount of pressure around that. And so never mind the food, there's also the booze side too, I think.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, typically these sort of detoxes that we're talking about rear their heads after Christmas. Then, I mean, and I know just from what I do, because I do these plans online, January is a big month for it. September's a really big month for it. But I think the no booze thing, so people white knuckle their way through January when they're doing dry January. I would say what's, and this is coming from a binge drinker, I have to say, that I am trying. What did my daughter say? This is a terrible indictment by your own child. She was like, Mum, you need to be a little bit more civilized the way you drink. I mean, really crushing. But it's just because she was like, you don't drink anything, because I like that feeling of like feeling really clear headed most of the time. But I will definitely go for it when I do.
Yeah,
I don't feel restricted when I'm not drinking. But, you know, for those people coming out of dry January and going mental on the 1st of February, you sort of think it's better to, you know, shave off the edges and smooth out the peaks and troughs so that you're not like really, 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 really good, absolutely smashed, really, 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 really good, absolutely smashed. So the hair civilized drinking is have a couple of glasses of wine a couple of nights a week rather than seven glasses of wine one night of the week.
Yeah.
You know, you want it to be more balanced. I mean, balance is the most boring word on the planet, but it is what we're talking about. And, you know, that 80-20 rule, I think, is one of the best rules that you can live by, so that you don't feel completely restricted all the time. You have 20% of the time where you can have your ice cream.
Yeah, I think there definitely needs to be a lot more kind of like intentionality with like the foods that like we might binge on and drink, because I think that can help. So like what we've talked about before, like planning those into your week, and with the booze, you know, just... There's an amazing book called Mindful Drinking by Rosamund Dean, and her basically, her concept is around the 3-3 rule. So you have three nights a week that you sort of say, oh, I'm going to have alcohol. And then on those nights, just stick to three glasses. And I found that quite an easy one to implement with a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I think also we need to think about the whys as well. Like, why do people go into binges and purges, really, because that inherently is where the issue lies. That, because things like the meditative practices that I'm a big advocator of, and I know you are as well, they're crucial to helping managing our stress. Because I don't know, but for me personally, and for a lot of people that I see in practice, the main triggers for their binges are normally emotionally related. They're normally related to a stressful work event, a stressful life event, or they get triggered by something they see on social media and things like that. So I think it's really important. Like, how do we manage it from a mindset perspective? So I think it's really like key to this whole conversation, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's true, actually. This is where journaling would be really good. Like, if you know, I have clients who are... at the end of the day, that chocolate drawer is so pulls them really strongly. And so, you know, journaling around what it is it tiredness? Is it, as you say, have you seen something on social media that's triggered you? It is very individual, this, and what triggers you, and learning and becoming familiar with those triggers then will help you to understand yourself a bit more and understand the cycle that you're on, if you're on one.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, should we talk a little bit about why I do? So I do think that there are valid reasons to do a reset. And, you know, the term quick fix has negative connotations, but I also think it can be really positive, because, you know, it can get you back on track really fast. So if you've unraveled, which is the sort of thing I do, I just can unravel. Actually, for me to get back on track to a place where I feel, you know, where it reinvigorates me and it sort of stops that downward spiral. As I said, though, it has to be part of a bigger picture of balanced, mostly balanced 80-20s. But I do think a quick fix can be really useful.
I mean, I have to say, Rose, this is probably where you and I do massively differ, in that I'm not a fan of anything quick fixy. I feel like it just feeds back into that whole, for a lot of my clients anyway, and the way that I practice it, it feeds more into that kind of that cycle. So I'm really more about consistency, being much more inclusive with foods. And again, this is why we have attract different clients, and it's good for us to have different opinions on here. So the only food I'd ever say is categorically one that I would say don't have that at all is something like Diet Coke or the diet drinks, really. But other than that,
I find it very useful in my practice. And so, and you know, and I also, I suppose when we see people for months. So you can do something like, I put people on a therapeutic plan for 10 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And then obviously it's part of us, probably around 6 months I work with people usually. So I think inclusive is a really good word, but it's probably not that inclusive because I'm going to cut out a shitload of crap that people tend to be eating.
So I agree with you, Rose. I think cutting out crap is a different conversation as well, because that is more about re-education of foods. Because a lot of foods actually that are marketed as being, inverted commas, healthy or the low calorie or 0% fat foods, that's ultra processed food essentially. So I think there is a big difference, and why the resets that you do can be really empowering and game-changing, and is more about re-educating people, because what you're doing is talking to them about whole foods essentially. So I think it's not the same as a binge purge cycle, because a binge purge cycle can often be things where people are like monitoring calories or just taking out macronutrients, but they're not thinking about bigger picture about food and what constitutes food that helps to support their body and their mind. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
But also, you know, on a physical level, by the way, guys, if you're doing a lot of these yo-yo diets, binge purge, whatever we want to call it, extreme diets, there can be a really negative metabolic effect. So I've seen that, I'm sure you do, Rose, in your practice, where people restrict so much and then you end up resetting essentially your energy thermostat, which means that the amount of calories that they need day to day is invariably going to be lower. I think the stats on people doing any sort of diet, particularly the calorie strict diets, I think they've had the most amount of research around them, but they almost always gain the weight and more, because it's called rebound gain. So actually it can be really detrimental. Most people doing these kind of diets are aiming to lose weight, let's be honest. And so it's kind of, it becomes really frustrating when you're doing that and then you actually gain the weight, but you end up back in that same cycle. But actually, every time you're doing the diet, you're actually resetting that thermostat, so it's less and less calories that you're needing to kind of basically fuel the body. So I think it's really important to understand that, that actually these can have that longer term detrimental impact.
And then also psychologically, your mood is less. You're living in this world where you're very restricted and you can't do what your friends are doing, and you're constantly feeling restricted, then, you know, your mood will probably start to suffer. And I think that's a really important one to think about, you know. And also, if you're not feeling, you know, the gut brain connection, you know, if you're not fueling your microbes properly, then that will also impact your mood. And on a physical note, the muscle mass situation, you know, so there is an interesting paper that I read the other day, actually, around water fasting, which is talking about 72 and longer.
Oh, my God. If I thought a juice fast was bad, that's like, that sounds horrific.
Yeah, I would never say do that without supervision, by the way. But they were talking about muscle mass. So obviously, when you're not fueling, you lose a lot of muscle mass. So be careful, because you think you might be losing weight, but actually you're losing muscle mass. However, this research paper was quite interesting, because what it did say is that your rebound muscle growth, if you do it right and you don't go and start, you know, if you reintroduce with a high protein, high veg reintroduction, your muscle mass will pick up those amino acids and it will work much faster to rebuild those muscles.
I mean, I think the thing about the whole kind of fasting thing that really like irks me is that people go, oh, you know, fasting, which I'm talking more about the 16-8 here, but, you know, people say, oh, you know, fasting's really worked. Well, essentially it's calorie restriction. Again, it's not, you're taking out a meal. So, because most people, that's what they're doing, really. So it's not that fasting per se is a magic weight loss tool. It's just that you've taken out a whole meal. But I'm also really aware that we're both sitting here as quite privileged people, because neither of us have had massive issues with our weight. And so, you know, are people listening to this thinking, well, actually I have, because I do think that really, why are we putting so much onus on a certain body type anyway? There's a whole, you know, movement around accepting different types of body imaging and not body shaming. And I think we've got really far there, but there will always be this kind of like underlying darker side that is like media images basically that promote a certain body type. And I think that's what also drives people into this cycle again.
Yeah. When I'm thinking about reset, I think about resetting the brain. You know, energy, sleep, brain clarity are all things that can be improved with some resets, certain types of resets in my experience. Mm-hmm. But you're right, because the majority of people who are in this cycle of restriction are doing it because of how they look rather than how they feel, which is probably actually an underlying reason not to do that.
Exactly. To get out of binge purge cycling is to just employ a very consistent diet that is just built around whole foods with no restriction, bringing in like good quality, complex carbohydrates, lots of vegetables, lots of good quality proteins, you know, healthy fats. But also, again, coming back to the kind of emotional side of things, doing things like prioritizing your sleep, doing meditative practices, managing your stress, not like going crazy on exercise, but doing a lot of mindful exercise like strength and resistance training, some walking and things like that. And none of these things are extreme.
Yeah.
Because the thing is that people want the extreme because they think that's going to get them to whatever, nirvana in terms of like whatever, you know. But actually, if you were to just do that and see how you feel for six months, I think it would make a big difference to a lot of people's relationship with this cycle we're talking about anyway.
It's sustainable is what we're talking about, something that's sustainable rather than something that isn't. Okay, well, there you go. We've resolved everything now. But that is, I mean, we are in absolute unanimous agreement if you were to do that.
Yes.
And actually, if you can do it for 6 months, that's it. You've changed a whole world of habits and it'll just be life. It won't be doing anything for 6 months because it's just be how you live.
Yeah.
Okay, should we go on to emails and YouTube comments?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, so here is one. Hi, Rose. I love your podcast. I'm constantly learning things each week, so thank you. I wanted to ask Rose a question, as I've heard her refer to what we wash our clothes with a few times, and I just wanted to know what that means. What should we be using and avoiding? Whatever chemicals you're putting into your laundry are chemicals that sit next to your skin all day, 24 hours a day, whether you're in bed, out of bed. And so what you wash your clothes in is really important, you know. So I would try and look for just non-toxic. The one that I use is called Method, but there are quite a few out there now. But I think Method is possibly one of the more common ones. Mm-hmm. It's really worth thinking about. And it's such an easy thing to change.
Yeah, actually, there's a lot of things in our cleaning products that are quite toxic, really. So even like, you know, cleaning surfaces and things like that. Like I have a problem with the ones that say kills 99.9% of bacteria. I mean, what's the 0.1% of bacteria they're not killing off, to be honest with you? And I think we can get like overly sanitized with some of these really like toxic chemicals. So again, not to be like really like woo-woo about it, but actually it's worth considering for sure. So yeah, we've also had a couple of YouTube messages here too. This one's response to our episode on semaglutides. My mother never ate growing up and was stick thin, lived on cigarettes and coffee and never exercised. Now she has osteoporosis, so bad that all her teeth fell out. Mm. She can't walk without pain and has a hunchback. I have learnt from this example how important it is to eat properly and do resistance training. I worry that people abuse Ozempic and end up nutritionally deficient, no muscle, with long-term health issues. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what we were talking about, really.
Yeah.
I had a lot of people commenting on that. I don't know about you, Rose, but I had loads of people sending me like private messages and things like that.
Everyone.
So I think it's still quite divisive, by the way. So
I got one saying that she was the only person at dinner that wasn't on semaglutide.
I know. I mean, I've just been over in New York, actually, and it's even advertised on TV there.
Oh, has it got the huge list of side effects? And you can
caveats.
Exactly.
Yeah. Crazy. The legal caveats on that stuff.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I've got another one here. Amazing, Rose. Thank you for this podcast. So interesting. I wish you could both do food conferences in France. Well, you never know. One day we might.
Maybe the world this break time will go on tour.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Well, I really enjoyed that one. I thought it's a very interesting, and I think it will hit home to a lot of people. It's relevant to a lot of people.
Exactly. Well, thanks so much, guys, for joining us on this episode. We really hope that this has resonated with you. I'm sure it will. I'm sure, again, we'll be getting lots of comments on this one. So, you know, do share your stories and experiences because we love to hear them.
Yeah, absolutely. Please, will you follow the show? You can go to the show page and click on the plus sign. We are on YouTube, The Wellness Breakdown Pod, if you want to see us. And you can email us at info@thewellnessbreakdown.co.uk, or you can message us on our Instagram. See you next week.
See you next week.